to step up here to the plate. And so I'm going to turn the meeting over to Al. Thank you.
Okay, Al Alcoholic. It's good to be with the Blue Ridge Speaker Meeting. I am the fill-in from my friend Scott in Minnesota, who I was looking forward to hearing tonight. He's a wonderful AA member, human being, and very versed in the traditions and history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And since I met him online a couple of years ago, about 2 years ago, he's influenced me greatly. These days, I kind of start out with having us just think about some stuff. And maybe as a fellowship, what we could do better, and may include all of us, that we are a three legacy program. We're not a one legacy program. And coming to meetings and talking about how angry we are, or how fearful we are, or how grateful we are, is fantastic, and we need to. But that in itself doesn't stand the test of time until we start looking at other things. I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous and really learning to be of service to AA. I really think that assures our chair here is turning from a taker to a giver. And I was really changed here when I got into the history and started looking at the three legacies, and still in it. I'm just I'm a student of it. I think most of us start out this way. We heard a convention speaker say something, or we heard something in the meeting that was history or traditions, and we took it for fact, and oh yes. And then, you know, later on we read and it wasn't a fact. It probably wasn't true, half of it. But we believe that it was because somebody said it from meeting to meeting to meeting. Now, I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because when they said that, it made me go look at it. If they hadn't said it, I wouldn't have looked at it. So it had a positive impact on my life, whether they were historically correct or not. I had to go look at it. And, you know, I think that we can probably ask anybody in AA, probably somebody in their first 3 months, certainly in the first couple years and past a couple years, would get an A on this question and the answer to it. What's the first chapter in the big book? They would say, hands down, Bill's story. Or you could just about ask a newcomer that, you know, because they're taught to read the book and they should be taught to read the book. Usually the sponsorship today is book oriented, where when I came in, it wasn't. But if you ask a member that's 10 or 15 years sober or 20 years sober, what's the first chapter at AA comes of age? Like me, it would be blank. I wouldn't know. And I think it's important that we talk about our literature, all of it, that it all is important. And AA comes of age is a very significant book. And it's one of the best places besides Language of the Heart in the 12 and 12 to look at the traditions. And there is some wording different and some different things that Wilson said in the traditions in AA Comes of Age that he didn't say in the 12 and 12. And he may not have written in the Language of the Heart, which is his grapevine editorials on the traditions, which I find very valuable. And I keep a subscription to the AA Grapevine because I can go online and I can look at the archives and I can see what they were looking at and when it first started coming out. And I can see where he first started to talk about traditions in 1945 and 1946. So we start to look at some of the myths that generate. And one is, in some areas, there's a critical atmosphere about Bill Wilson that there's no fact and it's mainly fiction. One of the ideas is that he was a moneymaker. There is no indication in history that he wanted to make money off Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, he remained poor for quite a long time until he got the royalties of the big book going. They had to beg for money and people had to house him and put him on couches. He lived in a clubhouse upstairs in a broom closet for a while too in New York. Wilson was a million-dollar personality. He could have gone back to Wall Street and made millions of dollars. He was an incredible stock speculator, and they would have hired him now that he had a he was sober. He already had a good reputation. What ruined it was his drinking. Wilson was given a lot of valuable opportunities from Charles Towns to come and be what was a lay therapist and get one third of the cut out of Towns Hospital with a expense account and a paycheck that him and Lois direly needed. And he turned it down because of the group conscience of AA. He says that he might have taken it, but the group conscience voted it no. He had lots of opportunities. Yale gave him an honorary law degree in 1954. He turned it down in the name of anonymity. And the other thing is that Bill Wilson had a lot of affairs. There's no truth or no fact that's fiction. I talked to a historian that zeroed in on Bill Wilson and his sexual life outside his marriage, and he came up with zero. There was no love letters. There was nothing to indicate that he had any extramarital affairs at this point. It came from one source, even Lois's biographer who wrote about it. It came from one source. They traced it back to Clarence Snyder in Akron, who spread rumors about Wilson and Dr. Bob because he had a resentment. And so, you know, when we hear things like this about Bill Wilson, that he was this, he was that, you have to look factually and historically, are these correct, what people are saying, or did they pick it up at a meeting and because they interpret it to their own liking, they started to spread it. And really, it's nothing more than gossip. Bill Wilson was an absolutely amazing person, inspired individual, not without defects, but a visionary for us. And these traditions really started early on before they probably put pen to paper or probably verbalized it. When he came out of Towns Hospital, he came out with the vision of Alcoholics Anonymous, as he talked about in his story as he lay in the bed, hospital bed. He thought of how alcoholics could help alcoholics in turn. So he was given the vision of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was a visionary. And he came stumbling out of Towns Hospital under the spell of a hot flash. And he knew that he had to work with other alcoholics in order to stay sober and to generate this thing. And really, he didn't do very well. We've seen historical records on how many people he worked to till he got worked with till he got to Akron, somewhere between 6 and 96. We've seen numbers on that. Nobody really knows because they didn't keep that documented. His conversation with Silkworth before he went to Akron was very, very important. Silkworth sat him down and said, "Hey, look, Bill, I know you're discouraged. You've been talking to me about it. Nobody's taken hold of what happened. Lay off the message of the hot flash and the four absolutes of the Oxford group. Give them the facts of the obsession and the physical allergy. Tell them about the hopelessness of your condition and tell them about your drinking and see what happens. And then you can start to talk about some of this spiritual medicine." And that's what Silkworth used, spiritual medicine that you have. So when he got to Akron, he had a lot of doubts. And as we know, I'm not going to go there. He ends up with Dr. Bob, and it's in his primitive stages of what Silkworth talked to him about, and it worked. And he captured Dr. Bob's spirit, and he gave Dr. Bob two things that Dr. Bob didn't have in association with the Oxford group. He gave him the idea of identification, and he gave him the idea of service. Dr. Bob would drink again, but would sober again on June 10th, 1935, never to have a drink till his death in November of 1950. So he had 15 years after that. And right out of the gate, they were focusing on alcoholics. So we already see the singleness of purpose starting to form right out of the gate. And as we see these traditions evolve, anonymity started coming up in 1936 and 1937. They came up, as some of us know, they got in Dr. Bob's house in 1937. They did some nose counts. They had about 40. And they decided, you know, are we going to go, where are we going to go with this? And they came up with missionaries, hospitals, and a book. And the book was kind of the last, really what they were looking at as time went on was a hospital for Dr. Bob to work in. And the Rockefeller organization that was getting involved at that point cautioned Alcoholics Anonymous about two things. And one was professionalism. And the second thing was making money. They said both would be pitfalls and they would probably end your movement if you got into those. So we can see professionalism, we can see anonymity coming out, we can see money, we can see singleness of purpose. Early on, we can see this before the traditions really started getting established. Then we see in the forward to the first edition, the big book, the publication first came out April of 1939. We can see that little whole half page in there about the traditions. And anonymity is mentioned in there. So AA's Wilson said that we finished with our flying blind period. And I think this is our second one, is the traditions, but we finished with our first one with the